Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is the Blue, White, and Yellow podcast from Leeds United Live, giving you the in-depth analysis on all the big talking points from Elland Road.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Leeds United Live with myself, Conor McGilligan, your multimedia producer, and your Leeds United writer, Baron Cross. And we are here to discuss everything Leeds United at the minute. The relegation picture is shaping up. Baron, how are you doing?
In the circumstances, I'm not too bad. It's the weather's not been too bad in Leeds the last few days. Life away from football is great. It's tough, isn't it, at the moment? It is really, really tough.
Should we just stick on that? What have you been doing? Any trips to Knaresborough or York or anything like that? Do you want to just talk about, you know, things like that, maybe?
No, nothing like that. It's it's just escapism, isn't it, from the football. It's just when we're not having to write about the football, life's just a bit rosier at the moment. It's tough to get away from the league table, isn't it? I think we're all doing our best to try and remain level-headed and neutral and objective. But the league table speaks for itself, and you know, I don't think anybody wants to sugarcoat anything. I think the table is the way it is, and ultimately Leeds need to win some games, and some games that maybe we don't expect them to win.
Yeah, 100%. I think so. And I mean, we were just discussing off air the permutations and what can happen and what might not happen. And everybody in the comment section, get your thoughts in. We'll flash them up on screen. We're really interested to hear what you guys think of Leeds' predicament at the minute. Two other teams have been involved in it as well. But I think probably the best place to start, Baron, is maybe reflecting on the Man City game. If you haven't checked Baron's post-match out, please do go check it out. It was a couple of videos before this one. It's well worth the watch. Any other thoughts after the game, Baron? Have you processed anything? Have you thought to yourself, that?
Well, the big development since that video, of course, was Goodison Park and Everton beating Chelsea somehow, which really stuck the boot in. I think that was the one thing I was clinging to in that video and telling people that if Everton can draw that game or lose it, then I think people can probably sort of make at least some peace with it. But for Everton to go and beat, you know, third place Chelsea, truly, truly remarkable. Like I've said, it makes it very, very hard to kind of to sort of sugarcoat things and look at it. I mean, they have got a game in hand and they're only 2 points back, and we all know the goal difference is effectively an extra point. That was one of the big things that hit me on Saturday, was the table had eventually leveled out after all this time. Finally, Burnley and Leeds won the same games played, same points, and yet Leeds are 19 goals back from Burnley, which really kind of drove home the perilous situation with, as I've said, Leeds effectively needing an extra point to get ahead of Burnley. So I think since then, I mean, it's hard to process too much because the City game was always going to be a write-off. You know, we never really expected much from that game. So you're sort of left with your thoughts after the Palace game and even before that. And it's just, yeah, there's four to play. And it's really, really tough to see them getting anything at Arsenal either. I mean, Arsenal are absolutely flying, going for the Champions League at Emirates, which hasn't been a particularly happy hunting ground. I know when we went there in the FA Cup a couple of years ago, when Leeds were in the Championship, they played really well and ultimately lost that game 1-0 in the second half, but played really, really well in the first half, if people can remember. But since then, it's been tough. You know, got thoroughly outplayed last season under Bielsa. I think it was 4-1, 4-2 maybe in the end. I've seen from Acosta scoring or having an impact from the bench. And of course, went back there in the cup earlier this season with a much rotated side, which of course people won't really read too much into. But it's not going to be easy going on Sunday, as I say, with Arsenal in great form. Chelsea is the only one that maybe people can at least try and find some reasons and some sort of optimism. Chelsea, if anybody doesn't know, will have the FA Cup 3 or 4 days after. Is it 3 days after or four?
Three, yeah.
Three, isn't it? Yeah, 3 days. So you would hope they're going to be much rotated and much distracted. But of course, as ever, it's just Leeds' luck that suddenly Chelsea's top four place is now for some reason looking under threat because they keep dropping points, i.e. at Goodison Park, and all of a sudden they may not be able to take their eye off that game against Leeds as much as they previously could have done, because all of a sudden Spurs and Arsenal are all over them. And let's say Spurs beat Liverpool somehow and then, I don't know, draw with Arsenal, then suddenly that Chelsea game against Leeds is quite important to them. So as we said off air, we love football for a reason, because it does create amazing results and things we didn't expect. I mean, even last night, I know we're talking about vastly different players in a different circumstance, but if you'd have been given odds on Real Madrid, not just taking that game to extra time, but winning the tie in the 90th minute, having not had a shot on target, I mean, it would have been astronomical odds. So, I mean, things can happen in football. It is 11 men on the field, and we have to hope that the Leeds players are galvanised in some way. And reflected on a piece earlier this week that the likes of Luke Ayling, Calvin Phillips, Rodrigo, the three appointed surviving members of the leadership council, really stand up to be counted and somehow drag Leeds through. And, you know, just looking at the Wolves game, we talked about that off air as well. Yes, Wolves had a red card, but who on earth would have seen a 3-2 win coming at half time? I mean, football does do incredible things on the pitch. And if Everton can beat Chelsea at home with a vociferous home crowd, then why can't Leeds? We saw what the 12th man can do on Saturday when they were losing. I mean, the noise was incredible. The best I've probably seen it this season. I know that it was quite loud for the Man United game, but on Saturday it was remarkable, especially when they went, you know, 2-3 and 4-0 down. So who knows if Chelsea can have the life scared out of them at Elland Road on that midweek match under the lights, then that may well be the little bounce they need going into those last two games against Brighton and Brentford, which, of course, on paper are the easier games. But again, as I've said, as mid-table teams go on the beach, they are probably the furthest from the beach at the moment because they're both absolutely flying. But, you know, who knows? With a couple of more weeks under their belts, hopefully Leeds can catch them cold.
Yeah, and it was quite interesting as well with the system, wasn't it, Barron, at the weekend? I think, you know, when you were reflecting on the Man City game, it was a bit of a 5-4-1, but it morphed into a 3-4-3. I thought the 3-4-3 actually worked. You know, I thought it was quite decent, to be honest with you. I think the only issue with Leeds at the minute, Barron, is, you know, we're still leaking goals, aren't we? You know, we are still leaking goals. And I guess, you know, Everton are going up against the top six, like we saw at the weekend with the Chelsea game, and they're managing to get a win and a clean sheet. It's difficult with Leeds at the minute to see us scoring many goals and keeping many goals out.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't like to be argumentative, but they've obviously conceded 4 to City, but before that, they've had 2 clean sheets, haven't they? I mean,
sorry, I wasn't clear there. I meant to the top. The top four sides, yeah. Oh, sorry, right, yeah. Not clarification, yeah, so, there, yeah.
Yeah, I think the City game certainly shows that there are weaknesses there to be got at, and ultimately quality can show. But this is what Jesse's been talking about in his press conferences. You know, that he talks about pragmatism and this need to, quite rightly, prioritise results over his wider vision. I'm sure if he had come in September or October time with a season ahead of him, he'd have a bit more time and license to kind of bed in his system a bit more. But he's having to be pragmatic and he's having to prioritise defence over attack in some cases to try and keep these sheets clean. So I wonder if they'll go with the back five again on Sunday. I do wonder if, I mean, that City, of course, was the first top six team we've seen Marsh go up against. So Arsenal will be another, and then Chelsea will be another after that. So I do wonder if this is going to be his designated formation against sides that he expects Leeds to be dominated by. I agree with you. I think it did work in parts. I mean, Rafinha playing at right back was odd to see, but you know, it wasn't ineffectual by any means. He did get forward quite a lot in the latter stages of the second half and served up a few chances into the box. So they've got the personnel to do that still. I mean, if we're assuming Cooper's out, which we don't know yet, I mean, Cooper, that'll be clarified tomorrow in the press conference. But should Cooper be out? It hasn't actually been made clear why Llorente missed out. I'd seen murmurings that there had been sort of talk of a knock or something that had kind of put Llorente back. But either way, you've got Llorente or Cresswell. I know fans are divided, and many fans now probably put Cresswell above Llorente, given how quickly the Spain international has fallen in recent weeks. But either way, my point is the personnel is there to shift Ayling out to right back and bring another centre back in and play that back five if you wish, with Firpo, of course, now the only option at left back. So, and it's away from home. So in theory, you would think they're going to be even more under the cosh. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But yeah, time will tell on the clean sheets. They are going to have to if they're going to have any chance at Arsenal, they are going to have to keep Arsenal down to a goal or two at most, and hopefully they nick something on the break. But tough to see, isn't it? It is really, really tough to see. As I say, the Chelsea game is a different cat of fish at Elland Road.
Yeah, again, it's a few of your guys' comments. Keep them streaming in. John Redmond says, no confidence in the team being able to save itself. We're gone, sadly. No,
John's a regular with his optimism. well-versed with John's post-match for the Huts.
Steve disagrees and said it's not over till it's over. Karen is coming with, we have history, I believe that, it's history, of making things hard for ourselves. I'm still clinging on that other results will go our way. Yeah, we'll get onto that in a little bit. Karen. Robert's coming in, this comment as well. Southampton vs Brentford at the weekend. Once it's not a draw, it's hard to see the loser of that game get any more points. I know it means they need 7 points to overtake them, but it's not impossible. Good chance of 40 points. Robert, it's a big
read.
I mean, that would need Southampton and Brentford to pretty much lose every single game and Leeds to pick up 2 wins and a draw, really, because of the goal difference.
Southampton have only got 3 games to play, haven't they? So
they have, I mean, they're tough games.
So we've got a game in hand on Southampton. They've got Liverpool, which we know they'll lose.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Southampton could well lose the last three, but can you see the others overhauling them? I mean, can you see Leeds picking up the 8 points they need to go beyond Southampton?
I think that's right, isn't it, Baron? I think
Points. They need seven points to go past Southampton because of the goal difference.
I think that's what we're discussing, isn't it? I think the
where are 7 points coming from?
Yeah, I think it's the confusion at the minute. Cause, I mean, we can look at the fixtures, we can look at the momentum at the minute between Burnley, Everton, and Leeds. But I think at the minute we're sort of really struggling when it comes to Leeds and in that final third and being able to, you know, really finish our chances and all this sort of stuff. I mean, you look at that, the chance at the weekend when Rodrigo was sort of inside 3 minutes, it was shades of Steven Gerrard slipping against Chelsea and Demba Ba being in. And I know a lot of City fans who I know were covering their eyes at that point, but we weren't able to take our chance. Whereas, you know, Aspilicueta makes a mistake against Everton and then Everton pounce on that mistake and score a goal. So it is just being clinical at the minute in front of goal. I mean, obviously we don't know the news with Patrick Bamford at the minute. Do you expect that he's going to have a big say with sort of 3 to 4 games to go, Baron? We're hoping so, aren't we?
I'm pleased you mentioned him because that is the silver lining we're all looking at and just praying for. And it's amazing. I've put this in the piece as well a few weeks ago, but when Jesse had first told us that Bamford had a chance for the last two, we were thinking, right, don't rush him back. We're going to be fine. Let's just let him have a proper close season, like get his feet up, get him rested and get him ready for next season and give him a chance of going to the World Cup. But it's amazing how desperate we've become, isn't it? Like we are clinging on to any shred of hope that he makes about for those last two.
I'd have a one-legged Bamford right now.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, that's where we might be at. I mean, he could well get back into full training before the Brighton game, which I think we're still hoping for. I think Arsenal and Chelsea will come too soon for him. But if he were to play, then we are still looking at a very rusty Bamford, who I'm sure Marcelo wouldn't have wanted to play. But I think Jesse's probably not going to have much choice. So, like you say, it's just somebody in the box, isn't it? I mean, I still look back on that first half against Norwich that you played and we looked like a team transformed. I know it was Norwich, but they did just look so much more coherent and cogent in attack and the patterns of play worked much better, having that focal point. So, yeah, like you say, I would take a half-fit, rusty Bamford just to have somebody with that innate ability, that sort of instinct in the penalty box, just to be, put himself in the right place at the right time and then be able to stick a leg out and stick the ball in the net, because that could be what it comes down to in those last two games.
Yeah, Darren's coming with a comment as well. Not strengthening the squad in January is a big mistake. Fault lies with Radrizzani. Kyle has said something similar. All this is solely on the board. I mean, I think there is a lot of... I mean, Tommy Hansen has also come in and said, would Lewis O'Brien have kept us out of this dump? I mean, it'd have been more depth, 100%, but I guess you can't really answer that question. It's all hypothetical, isn't it? But there's a lot of frustration at the board at the minute, Baron, and obviously we're not talking on conclusions here because Leeds United could stay in the Premier League, of course we can, but there is an underlying frustration at the minute buried with a lot of Leeds fans, isn't there? I think we can all detect that.
Yeah, there's a lot of finger pointing at the moment since Saturday. I think as I say, even during the City game on Saturday, the talk of the goal difference has really sort of riled people up and had a few fingers pointing at Marcelo because of the goal difference and of course, conceding 20 goals in his last five games, I mean, that will play a factor. I mean, that clearly does play a factor. We're 19 goals behind Burnley. So there will be a lot of recriminations and inquests. I don't think we're quite at that point yet. And I'm sure when the season ends, we will have a full digest of where things have gone wrong and where things should have gone better, which clearly they have. I mean, whether they stay up or not, this has not been a particularly fun season. And there are a lot of lessons to be learned. So, yeah, clearly at the moment, there are a lot of frustrated people and a lot of finger pointing, which is quite natural because obviously the fans are very, very passionate about their club, especially those that are paying to go to these games and are watching what's on the pitch at the moment. So the time will come for those decisions and those evaluations, won't they? But yeah, quite rightly, people are very frustrated with the board. But you know, I think Marcelo has played a part in that and his role in what has been a glorious era for the club. But clearly has been various factors that have just got away from the club and from him before he left.
Momentum is something that we've spoken about. Burnley have won four games out of six, which really has put the cat amongst the pigeons. I think that's something that has really, well, in this period of games, it's crippled Leeds a little bit, hasn't it? Because we've been on a decent run, really, under Jesse Marsh when you look at the points total. But Burnley's run has really come out of absolutely nowhere. And me and you were just discussing it off air. It does bear a resemblance to that Sheffield United run, doesn't it, towards the end of that Championship campaign in Bielsa's first season.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, Berin, with the calibre of Burnley's squad, obviously with the new management, this isn't prime Barcelona we're talking about. This isn't prime Real Madrid we're talking about. Can Burnley realistically keep this up for the next four games, do you think?
You would hope not, wouldn't you? I think when I looked into it the other day, I think they won four of their first 28 games and then they've then gone and won four of the last six, which is just crazy, crazy turnaround, isn't it? I mean, just none of us ever saw that coming, to be honest. So you would think that on the balance of probabilities is that clearly, they're performing well above par at the moment and are playing far beyond their capabilities, as the previous few years have shown under Sean Dyche. So you would think at some point it will level out and they will regress to their mean. And their mean, as the table shows, is a bottom four, bottom five club. So if we're getting into their fixtures now, I mean, I think we're all looking at that Spurs away game and praying that's going to be nil point, and that's
you
the
think
weekend.
So, wouldn't you?
I mean, that's the same weekend Leeds play Brighton, isn't it? So,
yeah.
If Leeds were to beat Brighton, which I think they need to, don't they? I think if we are looking at the fixtures and the points needed, Brighton at home has got to be 3 points for Leeds. Yeah. So that's clearly 3 points that Leeds, you would hope, can pull back directly on Burnley if they lose at Spurs. Villa is very much an unknown quantity. I think they are straying into distracted on the beach territory, which is a worry because, of course, the gods of football have decided that Burnley get to play that on the beach team twice, which is just, again, sums up the chaotic fixture list this season with COVID and various things, which I know that obviously nobody's to blame for, but it's just the way the gods of football have handed down Burnley's fixtures in that way. And then Newcastle on the last day, I mean, with the way the table is, I think at this stage we're probably hoping it goes to the last day with the way that the table is going and the momentum is. I think we're all hoping that Brentford game is alive. Obviously, before that, it would be nice if it was dead by then and Leeds are safe and somebody else has completely capitulated. But based on how Burnley and Everton are going, it looks like these are going to need to go to Brentford and get a win again. It looks like that's going to be a need for 3 points. So Burnley at home to Newcastle on the last day. Yeah, Newcastle, in theory, not much to play for beyond prize money and league position. But as you said off air, there is this narrative around Newcastle's players. And you know, as we've seen, in terms of the calendar year, I think only Liverpool have picked up more points or something like that. Newcastle in the calendar year are at the very top of the league. So you would hope that they haven't run out of steam by then, Newcastle, and they can go to Turf Moor and get something. Though I do completely take the point that it's Turf Moor and that place will be well up for it, won't they? So it's tough. Yeah, it's tough to see. But I think, yeah, you're looking at the Spurs and Newcastle games as the two of their four where you hope they can lose.
Dean's in the building. He says, need to start Joffy from the off on Sunday. Yeah, I mean, I think we saw the Rodrigo experiment not work up front again, which we've seen too many times. Obviously, this is dependent on Bamford, isn't it, Berin? If Bamford is back, then obviously he slots straight in. But Daniel James up front, we know he presses, but he's been quite vocal, hasn't he, allegedly to Jesse Marsh and saying that, you know, it's not his preferred position playing up front. but and he hasn't scored in 12 games, I believe the statistic I saw this week. So is it almost a, you just have to start Joffe now, you know, if Bamford's not there, we have to have a focal point.
I feel like we've been saying that for weeks, though, haven't we? I think the Palace game, I think, showed that Joffe didn't have much of an impact that night. And that was probably a night where he came away thinking maybe Joffe isn't the answer, or that particular night just wasn't good for him. But yeah, on Saturday, he came on and he did well again. He had half an hour against, obviously, a very, very good Manchester City side. And whilst he didn't get a goal, it was an incredible save from Edison. I'm sure most people have seen it by now, but an astonishing save by Edison from point-blank range. I mean, you probably look at Joffe, probably he's kicking himself. Joffe's probably thinking, if I put it anywhere else, it's a goal from that range. But he's just put it within sort of reach of Edison's leg. So I think that there is, again, a lot of merit to playing Joffe from the start. And I think we all hope that on the balance of play, we hope he does play. I think there's more pros than cons to bring Joffe in for Dan James. But yeah, we've been saying this for weeks, haven't we? And Marsh has been saying it himself, but hopefully Joffe's finally getting this running training that Marsh wants to see from him.
I think fans are quite confused. Is it a selection, you know, a tactical selection thing, or is it because he's been carrying Niggles? Because that seems to have been a little bit of a murmuring as well.
I think against City, it was probably tactical. I think Gellhart probably was fit enough and sharp enough to start that game, but Marsh had spoken post-Palace, pre-City, about how Leeds had actually regressed when James went off the pitch at Selhurst Park. The press began to fail and Palace had more time on the ball to actually create problems for Leeds. So I think we all suspected that James would continue because of the way Marsh had spoken about how well Dan James had done off the ball. Hmm. So I think it was probably tactical against City, but prior to that, certainly, I mean, looking back, so it was after Norwich, wasn't it? Marsh was saying that Joffe was probably going to start at Wolves. And then again, Southampton was a few weeks later. But they were the games that he was probably right in the reckoning to start because of, as you've said, the momentum. But I think it was injuries and niggles there that were stopping him from training enough. There was that false positive COVID test as well that Marsh had mentioned, I think, after the Southampton game. Yeah. So there have been some reasons that have forced Marsh's hand. But I would like to think that going into Arsenal, James's Gellhart is hopefully in the frame to start. But I you look back at Marsh's comments and it's hard to see why he wouldn't start James, because he likes his pressing again in a fixture where Arsenal are going to want to play out from the back.
It's a very difficult thing to grasp, though, isn't it, Baron? Because as a Leeds fan, it's like, you know, a striker needs to be started there. And I understand there's the press. I understand there's the unit. I get that. But it's a real conflict, isn't it? It's you've got a striker there who is clearly high calibre. You know, I know he's a youngster, but, you know, he's obviously Victor Orta had to do a lot to get over the line when he's been involved in the Leeds setup. I think his contributions per minute have been fantastic, really. Yeah. And you do think to yourself, like, okay, there is the press. I understand that. And then I guess it becomes system over the individual quality, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd like Gellhart to start. I mean, I think that's the way a lot of us would like to go. Just trying to sort of put some flesh on the bones as to why Marsh might do it. But I agree.
Yeah.
They need goals. They need to have some kind of rhythm and attack. And I think they have probably looked more potent and most potent when Gellhart's been on the pitch. His link-up play with Rafinha has been decent when they've played together. But yeah, I mean, the whole attack just seems to be struggling a little bit. Maybe getting a striker in there in Gellhart's shape might change things, but I think we're all just gagging for Bamford, aren't we? I think Bamford is the focal point we want to see in attack. But Rodrigo, Harrison, they're not playing particularly well either. Maybe it does take a striker to change everybody's fortunes.
There's got to be a bit of motivation for Bamford, right, Baron? Could he be the saviour for this club? It's almost like it's going to have that promotion feel about it if we manage to stay up this season.
Bamford will be thoroughly motivated. I mean, all you have to do is read his comments from the previous injury or injuries. You know, he's had several successive injuries this year that have consistently put him back and put him out of action and put him back in his timeline. And he persistently talked about how desperate he is to get back and play and to help the team. And I think ultimately that's why he re-injured himself and hurt himself at Wolves in the way he did, because he was so desperate to play. I think he'd said that in his heart of hearts, he shouldn't have played that Wolves game. But he wanted to help the team and didn't want to let anybody down because he'd seen how excited everybody was about his impact. And ultimately, he's then gone and completely snapped the injury and put himself out. We saw the tears in the dugout. So there's no doubting Bamford will love that narrative and love the idea of being the man to come in and save Leeds. And we'll be doing everything he can. And if we listen to what Jesse has been saying, then hopefully Patrick remains on track to play in those last two games. But yeah, there's no doubt at all that he will be completely focused on trying to have some kind of impact before the season finishes.
Yep. Guys, there's a few comments coming in about the board and what's going on up top. And as sort of Berens alluded to, that's probably an evaluation that we make potentially on a video at the end of the season. So we'll wait for that one. We need goals, not press, says Dan Claydon. John Dye has come in and said Joffy up front, James right, Harrison left. Play Raf, give him a free role, influence the game. Okay, so is that sort of
dropping Rodrigo?
Is that yeah, dropping Rodrigo? Interesting. Yeah, he's not been at his best, has he, Rodrigo Berens, over the past sort of couple of games? We've seen a little bit of a dip.
It's so football, isn't it, that things change so quickly, because he was the talisman after Watford. You know, you're looking at he scored.
It was three goals, was it? Was it three?
So he scored the first goal against Norwich, which got the ball rolling, and what was a pretty solid performance, especially in the first half. He then scores in the Wolves game and plays his part in that dramatic comeback. And then, of course, he scores against Watford, puts himself in the right place at the right time to capitalise on a defensive error at Watford. So he goes from being the guy that was at his lowest ebb at Villa, the Villa game, has those private talks with Jesse Marsh about the leadership council and what they want to get out of him. He's a record signing. How can they make this work? Has that little spurt of goals and performances an uptick. And then against Palace and City, he's completely anonymous, which kind of sums up his entire tenure at Leeds so far, really. Just hasn't really got going for him. I think injuries and COVID have played their part, especially in his first season. But ultimately, yeah, there are still major, major questions about his impact on this team and his input. Mm. When he's good, I think he's brilliant. And I think you could see his Premier League quality, especially last season, as Leeds made that step up. You could tell he was just half a yard ahead in some instances. But in recent weeks, you know, with the amount of injuries they've got, they need players like Rodrigo to almost be carrying the team, you know, with the amount of money they've spent on him and his experience and his undoubted quality as a Spain international. He's got to be running these games and making things happen. You know, look at some of the better playmakers in the league. And Rodrigo's got to be that guy. He's got to be making things happen for the team. And it just hasn't happened. You know, in the final third in recent weeks, it's just not been good enough at all.
I think it's pretty evident, Berens, isn't it? I mean, I think Everton have taken 12 points off the top four. Burnley have taken 6 points off the top four. With Leeds' games coming up, it might be the story of the season, really. Leeds is... Well, non-ability to pick anything up against the top four, that just simply has to change, doesn't it? It's been a massive failing this year. It's something last season which Leeds pride themselves on, really, Berens. You know, you look at the wins away at City and the win at home against Tottenham, drawing against Arsenal, you know, Man United and Liverpool. This season, we've really, really struggled, haven't we, to pick anything up against the top four. And it has been the difference, really, when you look at the points accrued from Burnley and Everton.
Yeah, I think this time last year we were looking at the Brighton loss aside, it was an amazing run of performances to finish last season off with, you know, a complete carnival atmosphere through all of these games. You know, being separate unbeaten runs of 5 and 6 games, didn't they, either side of the Brighton loss, which included the top six. You know, they were incredible against the top six, home and away, throughout last season, aside from one or two blips like Arsenal away. But yeah, Everton have just showed the difference. They beat Chelsea at home the other day when they absolutely needed to. They capitalised on that mistake from Azpilicueta. And ultimately, when you look at the table and who deserves to stay up and go down, you can look at that one result and say, okay, Everton beat Chelsea at home. If Leeds then don't match that result, then the table would show that Everton would be above Leeds, if you catch my drift. So if Everton can beat Chelsea at home and Leeds can't, then that's another tick in Everton's column for staying up and Leeds going down. So it's an ideal example. You know, it's a carbon copy. It's the very same fixture that Everton have won, and Leeds need to go and match that, which they absolutely can do. As I say, we have seen some strange results this season. Leeds are still waiting for that big season-defining result against one of the top six. I think West Ham away remains sort of the most impressive win of the season in terms of taking a scalp. It hasn't been there against the big clubs this season. So, as I've said already, at Elland Road, under the lights, a few days before the FA Cup final, it's got to be a big opportunity for Leeds and one they absolutely have to take, as Everton did.
As indeed. I'm going to push you for something, Berens. I'm going to push you. for a score prediction, and I'm going to write it down and we're going to revisit it. So everybody in the comment section below, get your score predictions in. Obviously, Leeds travel to London on a Berrin travels to London, more importantly. Sunday, 2 o'clock kickoff. Huge game for Leeds United. I tell you what, Berrin, I tell you what, if they could even just grab a point out of this, I mean, what a result that would be. I mean, obviously, that is, I'm going on the thought process of, you know, anything can happen in football, and it's why we love it. But I mean, it'd be huge, wouldn't it? It'd be huge.
Yeah, just massive. Just
on the anniversary as well, Berrin. Mark Viduka scoring at Highbury as well to keep Leeds up in 2000. Well,
they need Mark Viduka, don't they? Right now, I mean, can we wheel him out as a target man and just play balls off? I think, yeah, it's a big ask. Arsenal are absolutely flying, aren't they? Mm. There hasn't really been enough from Leeds under Marsh to believe that they're capable of a result like that. So it would be completely out of the ordinary. They're now missing Dallas. They might be missing Cooper. You look at Arsenal's, they beat Man United at home, they lost to Brighton at home, they lost to Liverpool at home, but then, you know, they beat Leicester, they beat Wolves, they beat Brentford, they drew with Burnley at home. I mean, if you want another example of what one of Leeds' rivals has done, they went to the Emirates in late January and drew 0-0. These are the kinds of points that these teams are picking up, and Leeds need to match it. So it's tough to see. I think, I mean, I'm going 2-1 Arsenal, or even 3-1 Arsenal. It's really hard to see it at the moment. And I'd obviously be delighted if I'm proved wrong. 1-1 would be absolutely incredible. 0-0 would be even better to keep a clean sheet. But yeah, I don't know what else I can say. I think I'd be lying to people. I mean, the form book for these two sides is entirely different, and Arsenal are motivated. I mean, it's not even a team on the beach. Arsenal need to win. They're at home. There's a feel-good factor around the Emirates Stadium at the moment. And Leeds, you know, Leeds are going to be missing last year's player of the year and possibly their captain.
Yeah, I mean, Steve sort of highlighted it quite well here. I don't think we have enough up front, unfortunately, to try, and that is it, isn't it? It just seems
Even if they do turn over Arsenal in transition and get up the pitch, unless they do get a massive overload, like 3-2 or something, it's just hard to see how it's clicking in the final third for Leeds to even carve Arsenal open.
Definitely. I mean, even a 0-0, we take a 0-0. I mean, we at least don't have to carve them open to get a 0-0, but then you're keeping Arsenal down, aren't you, to no goals at the Emirates, which would be, it'd be some task. But, you know, we've seen stranger things happen, as you say, Berrin. I mean, back in, what was it, January, February, when Burnley kept them to a clean sheet. I mean, Leeds there's not a huge calibre difference between Burnley and Leeds United.
Oh, no.
So who knows?
But it's just they've got the momentum. They've got that camaraderie. They've got that feel good feeling. They had the massive hurdle and the obstacle of losing Sean Dyche and the psychological burden of worrying, can we do anything without Sean? And now the manager's gone. Are we done? And they've proven emphatically that they can get results without Sean Dyche. They've cleared that psychological barrier, and they're now flying. I mean, they will feel so positive going into every single game. With the team ethic and the camaraderie they've got, we've just got to hope that ultimately they run out of ideas and, as I said earlier, revert to the mean, because they are a bottom five, club.
And Berrin, can we ultimately have a Premier League with Bournemouth, Fulham, Brentford, Brighton, and Burnley in there next season? It shouldn't be allowed, should it?
It's unethical, isn't it? Especially with Bournemouth doing Forest. I mean, I think we all want Forest to get back up as a traditional sort of big city club, but Bournemouth doing them the other night. I mean, yeah, it's. It could be a little bit light in that bottom half again next year if some of the big guns do go.
I think so. Well, guys, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you so much for joining. We've had a fair few of you in. I was going to say lunchtime. Might be some people's lunchtime. Yeah, me too. So there we go. We'll call it lunchtime. But thank you so much for joining. Make sure you head over to our website and all of our social medias to check out all the preamble for the Arsenal game at the weekend. Berrin, thanks for joining me, mate.
It's Connor.
And we'll see you in a bit, guys. Cheers.